By the early 1980s, of course, these virus hunters were perfectly ready to begin having a new disease, with the war on cancer failing and with the Public Health Service Centers for Disease Control having just gone through a few years earlier some of its terrible public relations disasters on Legionnaires' disease and the swine flu disaster, the flu that never appeared but the vaccine itself killed numerous people. Promoted by the Centers for Disease Control, so certainly these people had an interest in reviving the virus hunt with a new epidemic, and so it is this point that we switch to the official subject of this lecture, and that is that in a 6 month period, maybe eight month period, beginning in late 1980, continuing into June of 1981, a series of four men showed up just. Totally unrelated to each other, at the UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, at various doctors. There was a new doctor there, Michael Gottlieb, who just had a new machine that could count T cells. Now, T cells are one subset of the white blood cells of the immune system. They help in your immunity. They help fight off infections. And until about 1980, it was impossible to separate the T cells from the other white blood cells. You couldn't tell the difference, even in a microscope. They looked vastly too similar. Finally, a machine was developed using fluorescence and so forth that could distinguish the T cells from other white blood cells. It was a very, very subtle distinction. So for the first time, we could count T cells. And Dr. Gottlieb wanted to test this out. So he asked other doctors at UCLA Medical Center, forward to me any patients you have with immune deficiencies. I want to see what kind of T cell counts immune deficient people have. Do T cells disappear when your immune system is no good? Are there more T cells when your immune system's no good? What goes on? So over a period of 6 to 8 months, there were about four patients referred to him from various doctors. These patients didn't know each other. They had no connection with each other. They were totally unrelated. They were four homosexual men. They were ages 25 to 50. They had been living the fast lane lifestyle. That is to say, they had been racking up hundreds to thousands of sexual contacts per year, often dozens in a single evening. They'd been going into the discos, the bathhouses, the sex clubs and so forth, and using going through all of the lifestyle associated with that particular lifestyle, which is a subset of the homosexual community, involves tremendous amounts of drug abuse. That is to say, if you're going to have 10 or 20 or 45, I've even found out about sexual contacts in a single evening, well, you need cocaine and amphetamines, methamphetamines and so forth to get going. Then you're going to have poppers, a special drug used almost exclusively by these homosexuals. It doesn't have any hallucinogenic properties. It doesn't produce a high, but it does facilitate anal intercourse. And also similarly, ethyl chloride, which is a derivative of an old anesthetic. And then finally, to wind down at the end of the evening, you need downers and, I don't know, maybe heroin or whatever. But there's going to be quite a mix of drugs. And so these fast lane homosexuals were using tremendous numbers of drugs, and the drug craze for them had begun in the early 1970s and was taking off, and by that time was almost 10 years old, 8 to 10 years. And these men showed up, and they were very immune deficient. They had pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Now, pneumocystis carinii is apparently a fungus. It's a germ present in the lungs of every man, woman, and child on the face of this planet. The moment you're born, it enters your lungs. It's just everywhere. It's ubiquitous. In most of us, it causes nothing at all. But if you have no immune system, your immune system keeps it in check all your life. And you know, you're just not going to have to worry about it. But if you're immune deficient for any reason, for example, severely malnourished, you're an orphan after a war under harsh conditions, taking cancer chemotherapeutic drugs, for example, which directly destroy the immune system in the hopes of battling cancer, but do destroy the immune system, or for other reasons, if you are severely immune suppressed, the pneumocystis carinii germ can take over the lungs and create a very serious and even a fatal pneumonia. And it has been seen before in all age groups and risk groups and so forth, but it's not terribly common at most times when you have a healthy, typical, peacetime, capitalist society. These men, all four, had pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. They had Kaposi sarcoma, a cancer of the blood vessels that creates reddish and purplish splotches on the skin. They had candidiasis, which is a yeast infection orally in the esophagus and even and in the mouth and so forth. So they were in pretty bad shape, and it turned out they had very few T cells, according to Dr. Gottlieb's device. Now, Dr. Gottlieb realized right away that this was a hot new epidemic that might interest some agencies of the federal government. It was a new disease. You see, and they're always looking for new diseases, anything that shows up. There are quite a few diseases every year, but anything that looks spectacular, they go for. It's a good publicity device. It's something that the federal agencies can ride to the rescue and save us all from. So Dr. Gottlieb contacted a local agent of the Centers for Disease Control in the Los Angeles County Department of Health, and that person had found a fifth such case. Together, the five cases were submitted to the Centers for Disease Control. Now, what you had were entirely old diseases. There was nothing new. Immune deficiencies have been seen before. Pneumocystis has been seen before. Kaposi sarcoma has been seen before. Not typically in this age group in men 25 to 50 years old in the United States, but still, it's been seen before, and it has even been seen in those risk groups, just not commonly. You wouldn't typically expect five. Remember, they had no connection to each other. But by the time they were reported as a group of five, they were called a cluster, as if they had somehow maybe infected each other with some mysterious thing. You see, they had no connection to each other. Still, they were reported as a cluster. Remember I told you how clusters are used all too often by epidemiologists to say that a disease is infectious. And remember what I told you what clusters really mean, that a disease is not infectious. Well, in any case, these cases were reported to the Centers for Disease Control. The head of venereal diseases, head of infectious venereal diseases at the CDC, James Curran, got the report, wrote hot stuff across the top, rushed it into press with the MMWR of the Centers for Disease Control. This is a weekly newsletter. It goes out to the media. It's the basis of many news stories that you'll see on television or in the New York Times, which these reporters simply take whatever the government tells them without even asking whether this might be the right interpretation, might be the right conclusion. This directly plants stories in the news media all the time, and it led to the beginning of what is now known as the AIDS epidemic. It was defined as an epidemic, defined as a cluster. Immediately, the Centers for Disease Control and shortly thereafter, the virus hunters saw the opportunity in exploiting this and saying, here's a new disease that the entire public could catch, and you will all catch a deadly virus. Of course, they were already jumping several steps ahead of the game. How did they know it was a virus? Well, they didn't, but that was the story.